Hello, everyone. Welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Duststorm.
And I'm your other host, Godzilla T.
And I'm Toa Freak.
And we are back with another episode talking about Hunt the Truth. This time, episode number 3 is out. And we have quite a bit to discuss, as always, as I think it is pretty much for every episode of Hunt the Truth that we have. Although this one isn't quite as complex, so it's a nice little slower paced one. I don't nearly have as many notes for this week, but it's still a lot to go through. We still have lots to cover, and we have quite a revelation in this episode as well. As you guys have seen probably all the tweets regarding the triad, well, we get a little opening revelation of some of the stuff that actually is going on behind the triad and the Twitter account that is appropriately named R3Lives. So we'll dive into a little bit of that. But Toa, welcome back. We missed you last week. Lots of interesting stuff happened last week.
Yeah, that's a word for it. Or that's a way to say it.
Absolutely love the video you did on it.
Oh, thank you. And you got, I was able to catch like bits of yours in between my internet crapping out, so.
That's never good.
No, but it seems to be stable now. So hopefully.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. That's awesome to hear.
Okay, I have to do this. It has to be done. Hi, guys.
It's a Mashak.
Sorry,
he's
it
back.
Alone.
I'm so happy. Oh,
everybody's
so great.
Happy.
Oh, yes. Mashak, one of my favorite characters from this whole series. He's so happy. We speculated that it might have been him last week, but it's so nice to hear his voice back. It's so cool.
Yes, definitely. When I started listening to this, because you know I was listening to it at work, and I had to ignore everybody because people were saying things that I didn't want to hear because you know I hadn't listened to the episode yet because I have to listen between customers. I don't sit at a desk where I can sit and listen to something all the way through first shot. So I have to take it in little chunks. Anyway, I'm like, shh, quiet. I'm still listening. But oh man, it was awesome to hear that voice once again.
And he
does
ask
a very interesting question during the broadcast. So we'll get to that here in a little while.
Oh yeah, there's lots of Mashak like questions that get asked throughout this podcast, which is just so it's so rewarding to have him back. It feels so mm-hmm. good to have him back. Thank you, Noah and Ian, for bringing him back.
Yes, definitely.
But let's get on to episode 3. Not too much that is happening on the Hunt the Truth site for this week. We did get, of course, the image that you get with every episode that gets put out there. So there's a wall in the safe house that Maya has and lots of drawings on it. Kind of a lot of stuff that we saw from episode or season 1 of Hunt the Truth. A lot of kind of like, you know how you have the red lines pointing to stuff? Well, imagine just chalk everywhere on the wall. So that's the picture that's actually the background of our stream tonight, if you are tuning in live to us. So lots of interesting things you can kind of dissect there. He has Sully's crew up there.
And he's got a very important note about Sully on there, I might add.
are you talking about this particular word?
yes, you know, it's a okay. crucial detail you need to know about Sullivan.
Yeah.
He's a dick.
Yeah.
Crucial detail there.
There's another little thing in here that I just noticed, but BXR.
Oh, God.
Did anyone else notice that?
I have not noticed it. There's so
I did
much
not of, notice it until you said it.
Did you know there's like Cedra's mentioned on there, too?
There's a lot of stuff on here, and I actually haven't been able to go through and dissect all of this image. So if there's anyone that in the chat that has dissected this image and knows of any particular details we should be aware about, please post in the chat and we'll talk about it. Otherwise, like every time these episodes come out, I barely have enough time to get home, write all my notes, and then prepare the stream. That's literally all the time I have. So if anyone else has dissected the image yet with all of Mashak's writings on the wall, then please put it in the chat and we will talk about it. But let's see. Other than that, there wasn't anything else that was on the Hunt the Truth blog. No new videos that have come out from Meridian that I've seen. Have you guys seen any new videos?
I
think
not,
the ones that we saw from last week were pretty much it.
Yeah. I've been pretty much in the dark today, so.
It seems like, but who knows, we might get something. There's still a few more episodes left, so maybe, or if not Meridian, maybe we'll get video of something else before the end.
I mean, we got a new Xbox game trailer today, but that's the only thing I've seen.
Well, and the other thing too is that we've gotten to the point in the marketing where it's already past the five colonies have already had this major event happen. And all the cams that we got were from Meridian. So the events already happened. We're already past that point in the Hunt the Truth episode. So I'm wondering if it's because we're already past that, because the events already happened, if it's kind of done for now.
I'd say for now it probably is. I mean, especially because it seemed to be leading very specifically up to those live action trailers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is one question. Penn's actually mentioned this in the chat. Is I would like them, if they could, somehow work in a little detail how M'Shaak figured out Pharaoh was not Pharaoh.
I bet it's in that image somewhere.
Probably.
I bet you it's in that image. I did see Pharaoh up on that image.
Mm-hmm.
I just haven't had a chance to really take a look at it.
I mean, if this shot is at her cabin, this is kind of after the fact. But if we could get like just a short little chunk to kind of figure out or to see how he figured it out in a picture like this or something like that. It doesn't necessarily have to be part of the podcast.
I take back what I said. This could be actually at M'Shaak's house when she raided his home.
It could be, but seeing they mentioned the cabin in the show, I'm betting it's probably the cabin.
Well, they did mention too, or she mentioned about when she raided his home.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I mean, it could be her house, but
it just doesn't look like a M'Shaak place. It's right. A little too rustic.
Yeah. I mean, the books, I guess the books being there does kind of solidify that it might be mm-hmm. Maya's safe house. But
it is Maya's safe house. She says that she established, she says in the, do you want to talk about that now or when we get to it in discussing the episode? Because she does say exactly, you know, like what it is and how she came about it.
What, the wall?
Oh, the wall. I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about the house.
No.
We're not
the wall.
Okay.
We're just discussing where the wall is. Is it in M'Shaak's place or is it in Pharaoh's place?
Oh, no. I figure this is probably Pharaoh's. Sorry.
Okay. No problem. Yeah, we'll get to the house thing in a little bit. Yeah, let's go ahead and move on. And it looks like Eric Yaboo is in the chat. He's looking at the picture right now. So thank you for looking into that. Someone will keep an eye on the chat and we'll get to it as we can. So starting off with episode 3, Maya is on the run from Conrad's point after Oni just decided to bomb the place. And she is going to a secret location that is totally off any of Oni's registered safe houses. It's one of the things that BB pointed out, that we're going to a place that's not on my list of registered safe houses. And she's like, yeah, there's kind of a point to that.
There's a reason.
Yeah. So she's traveling, obviously, with this data packet, this data chip that Ari got after he unfortunately died in the last episode. And she doesn't really feel that after what Oni just did, trying to take out Ilsa with her still in there, that she doesn't really trust Oni to do the right thing with the data. So she's going off on her own, going to her own safe house to find someone who ends up being M'Shaak that could help her figure out what the data is and actually correlate the data that Ari got with the scans and everything from the Meridian site that everything happened, and try to figure out how that lines up with everything else that's going on.
I like how she puts it. The only person she could trust to decipher the data has been dead for months.
Yeah. And
when she said that, I knew exactly who she was going after.
Oh, yeah. And we did speculate a little bit on it last episode of who it might be.
Everybody mm-hmm. was speculating. It's like that the second, like, even in my own videos, it's like, it's M'Shaak. It's M'Shaak. It's probably M'Shaak. It's M'Shaak.
Yeah. Hey, it's a M'Shaak.
I'm so glad they did not get rid of him.
I don't think they could.
Well, they're
just too attached.
3, 4, 3. Well, the Halo series, and I'm talking the games, the books, everything, they have a habit of killing off really good characters. And M'Shaak is one of those really good characters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and some of the deaths okay, yeah, they push the story forward, but some of them are like, huh? Black team. Some of the stuff that they do, you're like, why? It was just getting good with this character and you killed him off. But I'm glad to see him back.
Well, they packaged him up in a nice little box, hidden away, dead for a few months, and he's back.
Yay!
And at least we have him for another episode.
At least one.
At least one more after this one. So going back to her dropship, she's on her way to her hideout. She's talking about how Oni sent in everything that they had to try to take out Ilsa while she was there. And she kind of felt that at that point, Oni regarded her as disposable. Another data point of just sacrificing her and Ari to take out Ilsa Zane being a big threat to the UNSC and Oni. And there was something else that she kind of brought up, that something Sully and Ilsa was saying whenever they were talking, and that there was really no room for anything else other than just kind of like all out war. It seems like, whenever UNSC would bomb a certain rebel uprising, the rebels would just get vengeful and try to retaliate.
Mm-hmm.
And this relationship had gone on for so long, even before the Covenant War, that she started to think what Sully and Ilsa said was probably right, that there doesn't really seem to be any interpretation for anything else. And that the stuff
there's
that
no
Pharaoh
right,
was...
There's no wrong, there's just ideas or opinions.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it kind of goes to the whole point of her trying to build up at least her following, kind of her Oni job at the time, to try to help build them up and help them prosper. Although, if you kind of look into the Oni aspect of them, they're just going to probably pull them for resources like they did before they kind of left them out to dry for the Covenant War. But it's still one of those things where, in the end, both sides really feel the only way to address this is with brute force.
It's, you know, anytime you have a big disagreement like this, if you can get past the anger, which UNSC feels towards the Outer Colonies and vice versa, then you can sit down and talk and listen. Okay, you've got some good points. You've got some good points. Let's talk it out. But it's getting past that anger and the feeling of wanting revenge that seems to drive this conflict. UNSC hits the rebels hit the UNSC, and it self-perpetuates. And it's just kind of the way things go. And I think Pharaoh, at least her character, was trying to condition the rebels to get themselves, put themselves in as an economic power instead of a military power. And then they could bring the UNSC to the table to talk about the problems. So right. I think that's kind of the three points of view about this conflict.
And we hear a little bit later on in the episode that Pharaoh started to believe in what she was actually preaching, that they could become an economic power that would actually garner some respect from UNSC to actually talk deals with them instead of just all out raiding them for resources and just leaving them out to dry from the Covenant War, of actually being a power that, okay, you might want to actually talk to these folks.
Mm-hmm.
But as we go on, as she's actually approaching her safe house, she goes on to say that she has lost all trust in Oni after they decided to bomb the camp that she was at while she was still there. She doesn't trust what anything Oni would do with the data that she had. She said that they would likely cover it up, let other colonies fall, but she feels that it was time for her to just step up, because the data that was on the chip could help save lives, and that she needed to get real answers and see what the data actually meant. And the only person that she could think of to do was locked up in her safe house, Mashaq. Going to see Mashaq, we get to the safe house, which she says is actually more of a farm than a house. It's on Venturon, out in the middle of a barren wasteland, miles from anyone else. And there's occasional alien traders, she says, but other than that, it's just completely quiet, completely isolated, completely blacked out from any comms that she set up after she got shocked there. And she established this safe house based on something that Ari had told her, and a lesson that she learned, where after you are set up for an Oni op, you basically lose your identity. You forget kind of everything that you are for the sake of keeping your identity for the operation. And the safe house was designed in such a way to kind of keep hold of who you are before the mission, be able to ground yourself in a place that is safe, where if you need to run away from an op for some reason, that you can safely go there. If cover gets too crazy or too deep, somewhere to go and hide, remember who you were before any of this mess. And the last thing she said is a place to keep secrets, one of which being Mashaak. So lots of uses for the safe house. And I think it's pretty interesting to see that there's a lot of connection between Ari and Maya, that there was just kind of this, that she had this kind of respect for Ari. And now that she's lost him through Ilsa just completely putting a cap in his head, going through this, it's really kind of cool to see that there's still a lot of development within the story. Kind of adds a lot of character to the whole safe house analogy, really. But after she gets to the safe house, she's actually carrying Bostwick, who woke up, and she sedated her. And BB obviously made his little comment, we should get her professional treatment. And she's just dragging her along as she gets to the safe house. Gets to the door, starts unlocking it, and you hear a voice from the inside. It's Mashaak. It says, I have a gun. You don't want to come in. I have guns. And then she opens the door, and Mashaak's like, I thought you would never come back. I didn't think anyone would come back.
I'll be honest, when she opened the door, I half expected him to actually have a gun and shoot her, or just like throw something ridiculous, like a fork or something at her.
I think Maya is smart enough not to let him have access to a weapon as far as, you know, a firearm.
There were technically weapons in there. He just didn't know about them.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a little bit. Yeah, the nice. Absolute relief when he saw Maya was hilarious.
Yeah, he was all tensed up, and you can tell a little bit later on that he was kind of going crazy as it was already, being completely rid of all tech. He looked pretty rough.
He was tortured in his own.
He had to read books,
paper books. As an aside, though, it's nice to know that paper books survive for the next 500 years. But that's me.
Yeah.
Hey, it's you got to rely on technology somehow. I mean, Ari relied on technology to make a freaking analog radio.
Yeah. Sometimes the old tactics are the best tactics.
Especially exactly. When it comes to books.
Yeah.
Reliability. It's a thing. But yeah, so going back to when Maya opened the door, she kind of described that he looked rough, and with how much weight that he'd lost just in his face, his bloodshot eyes just stood out that much more. And she comments on the place because it's all trashed up. She's like, what have you done with the place?
What have you done to my house?
Yeah. And he's like, you have no idea. And then BB speaks up and he's like, you're pretty active for a dead person. And Mashaak's like, is that an AI? What? He like, you could hear his voice. He just like lights up. It's like he's a kid in a candy store. It's like, there's technology here?
Yeah. And even beyond that, there just needs to be at some point just a show with just Mashaak and BB. I just want to see.
Oh, yeah.
They have the greatest chemistry.
Please. That was so much fun listening to those two interact.
Which obviously we'll get to, but I just.
Yeah. No, we definitely will. But yeah, they have some interesting dialogue, which I think just solidifies their characters even more. Because Mashaak is definitely the kind of free will, outlandish person, really nerdy, geeky, and BB, obviously being an AI, is very practical, logical, and in a way, their personalities clash, but they also complement each other so well.
Well, I mean, they're polar opposites when it comes to their beliefs. BB is, he's the epitome of the government, and you got Mashaak, like you said, is just this free spirit that likes to dig in the other guy's business. You know, it's just that's the one thing they have in common, is they like to stick their nose where it shouldn't be.
Well, it's Oni.
True.
And we've heard that a lot already in Hunt the Truth.
Yeah. But it's great how they did that. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. And after BB speaks up, that's the whole part of where he was saying that he was tortured with no comms and he had to read paper books. After that part, Maya goes, he continues rambling on about the books, but Maya goes on to say how when he found the shock, she didn't really feel the need to kill him. From what she found, he wasn't really a threat. He was a great hacker, but wasn't dangerous. Yeah.
And, you have to describe why now.
Yeah. So whenever she raided his home, he totally freaked out and then ran into a wall and knocked himself out.
That was just...
I mean,
that's just so Mashaq.
And I can just see Maya standing there looking at him like, oh my God.
A gun in hand, she's just looking at it. Looking
she's ready back. To shoot him and he's... Oh man,
I can't kill him now.
No wonder she's
like a little puppy.
It's no wonder she spared the gory details, because they were pretty embarrassing.
Yeah, no kidding.
Oh yeah, that was definitely one of those moments. Like, yeah, that kind of sounds like Mashaq. So his pants kind of just freaked out to the point where he ran into a wall. He headbutted a wall and knocked himself out. I guess at that point you really do feel bad for him.
Yeah, it's you can see, you know, Maya's like, no, I can't. I'll just take him. I'll go hide him. I can't kill him.
Yeah. So she hides him. She takes him back to the safe house, and she basically turns the whole thing into, like, that's when she made the blackout array. So for a kilometer in every direction, she completely just blocked out any radio communications whatsoever. Basically left him Techstar, because she didn't want him poking around and attracting people to her secret base.
Yeah, unwanted attention.
Right. And I actually listened to kind of the undertone of what he was saying in the background while she was explaining. And he was actually saying how whenever he was done reading the books, he would have no one to talk to about the books. And this is kind of a sign that he was going crazy. He was saying how someone named Tommy was stealing food.
I missed that. I heard the comment about the books, but I missed the Tommy part.
Yeah. So he went a little crazy, to say the least. I would think that in isolation after a few months, you would probably go crazy.
Yeah. Look at Ben.
Well, yeah, that's federal prison. That is meant to be isolation.
Well, still, it's the same thing. He's been isolated, and look what it did to him.
Yep. Yeah,
I'm truly amazed Mashaq's in as good as health as he is.
But at least Ben didn't have to read paper books. The ultimate torture.
Maybe we need to suggest that to the U.S. government for getting information out of people. Make them read paper books.
Have them read paper books.
And get the right paper books. Read 50 Shades of Grey.
I was thinking the exact same thing.
Does the wow. Constitution outlaw cruel and unusual punishment?
That's not racist.
Not at all.
Mm. Oh, God.
I have a bad Middle Eastern accent.
Yeah, I don't think good one would have made that any better.
I'm keeping it top.
Fair enough.
Current, I guess, would probably be the better word.
I appreciate it. So, basically, after the whole thing of her saying that he was tech-starved, that there was no tech around whatsoever, that the AI was probably the best toy that Mashaq could have got his hands on. So, of course, it goes back to Mashaq and BB, and they have a little dialogue, and this is the part where Mashaq is asking BB about why he doesn't have a human form avatar, and BB is obviously making the logical sense, well, I don't feel like flattering myself with my intelligence and like having to show it off as a person, and I'd rather just be as I am, a black box. And he's like, but you're more like a blue cube.
I'm going to call you Blue Cube.
Yeah. And BB electrocutes him. And he's like, did you just electrocute me? And he's like, no. Oh, wait. Oh,
yeah.
Yes. Yes, I did.
And as I keep saying, just that English accent just makes it that much greater.
Uh-huh. And then Mishak basically says, well, I'm going to put you in the microwave.
Yeah. So Maya's like calming her down. I was like, don't just stop fighting. The chemistry between them is pretty good. And Mishak goes on to say, why did you bring BB here? He's just going to tell Oni that you kept me alive.
And BB's like, I can hear you too.
Yeah. So he's whispering to Maya about how AIs are made, how they're made from dead humans' brains, and they're basically computer zombies.
Go in and reprogram them. They're computer zombies.
Computer zombies. And Maya's like, I don't care. I just focus on this thing. I need you to figure out these anomalies. And she has the data chip, and you can hear Mishak getting excited. Because she needs someone that can correlate what's the data that's on the chip with stuff that's not on Waypoint, but in the slush. So Mishak's like, it's Christmas. He gets all giddy. He gets so happy. Like, you can hear him. It's like, yes.
Yeah, basically, Maya opens a channel through her jammer that is encrypted to keep BB from calling home. And so, Mishak is like going nuts.
Yeah, he finally has access to all of his stuff again. But so before we move on to
the true tragedy. Oh, okay.
We'll get to that in a second. But
yeah,
you think with a compad with encryption that is set up by Oni, with BB being an AI, wouldn't he still really be able to kind of like break into the encryption and backbone off of it anyways? Does that
he
not-
could. I mean, yes, he definitely could if he chooses to. But the way they scripted him, after this incident comes through, I don't think he actually did. Because if he did, why wouldn't he say so?
He's still working for
Oni. A bastard.
No, but he is the kind of bastard that likes to flaunt what he can do.
That's true.
Good point.
I mean, best I could figure is maybe because he is a fragment. You know, this is obviously a BB fragment like we saw all those times in
the Kilo 5 trilogy.
Thank you. And as we saw in First Strike, when, you know, Cortana, not necessarily when she was splitting herself off, but when she was like multitasking essentially in the Covenant ship, you know, as she stretched herself thinner, there was less and less she could do. So best I can figure is that because this is a BB fragment, it's not quite as capable as the full BB. So maybe this, whatever this encryption was enough to keep him out. Mm-hmm. Had it been the full BB, then perhaps he probably could have broken through that like it were a piece of paper.
Well, that's kind of interesting that they say that, because when they, now this could just be something they didn't put in there because it was assumed, but is this a BB fragment or is this BB?
I mean, generally I would assume that this is a fragment given past experiences with BB in general. But I mean, yeah, they never do say whether it's a fragment or whether it's the full BB.
I mean, that could go into why BB would not necessarily hack that comm channel, because it would put himself at risk of destruction. Now, he could be playing the angle. He wants to gather as much information as he can before he reports back. And when you have one channel open, it's pretty obvious where it came from. So BB might just be buying his time.
That's true too. The other thing though is like the reason I mainly think this is probably just a fragment is it's a little lapel pin.
That's what I was thinking too. There's not enough power on that pin.
I mean, like even by, you know, granted we're in 2558, so technology probably advanced quite a bit, but
well,
I mean, we have instant, you know, we have instantaneous communication across, you know, thousands of light years, so as far as we've seen in other media so far going up to this year, AI still basically need this, you know, a lot of support systems for a full AI.
At the very minimum, they need a Spartan 2 combat arm.
Yes, Yes, exactly.
Well, and we take Cortana's chip, for example. That's just something that she's residing on the chip. She has to actually interface with something in order to really do anything.
That's something I've got a problem with, that they screwed up in Halo 4. But if she seems to operate on the chip, even when the chip's in the chief's hand.
Yeah.
So that, it's like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
But then again, in Halo 2, she could transfer herself, so maybe there's some
short-range communication.
That could be, that could just be a wireless transfer of a fragment, though.
Yeah. I don't know. I was like, there's some ways I could imagine, but yeah, it did bother me just a little bit.
So, we've got kind of inconsistencies on the whole AI fragment versus full.
And what they're, what they can be supported on and whatnot.
I think it's one of those things. There's probably some kind of really weird explanation for it.
Grim Brother One, if you're watching this, you need to explain. Next cannon fodder. Exactly.
There you go. How wireless transmissions of AI work. But I think with BB being on a lapel pin, the size of it, and him actually still being able to project his image to still kind of like audio, like interact with them visually through a hologram, audio wise, and be able to do like short range scans and still have radio communications, that I don't think it's the full BB. I would agree it's a fragment.
Because even still, especially his past with losing that fragment, or reincorporating that damaged fragment, I'm pretty sure he's not real keen on doing that again.
Well, and also think about how the situation of what BB was put in and Maya being at Conrad's point in the last episode. They wouldn't risk putting a seasoned AI, someone that's as powerful as BB that has a bunch of secrets as BB does, like the actual AI, into a scenario where he could get easily compromised if somehow Maya was kidnapped. It just doesn't make sense from Oni's perspective.
Built in to delete. Well, they have built in security, which was proven in the Kilo 5 trilogy when BB was damaged in the radio. It basically wiped his memory.
True, but that wasn't. I mean, I don't think it would be.
I don't think they'd want to do that to the full AI. Yeah.
Right. Right.
I mean, I'm sure it would still exist, but yeah, it just seems like there'd be too much too risk valuable. Putting the full AI. Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially one that's served with the previous Synchronia, now serves with, at least as far as we know, probably serves with the current Synchronia.
Yep, I would agree. So I'm betting we're looking at a fragment.
That is the most likely proposition, but it's just interesting the way his character is not really working against Maya yet.
Yeah, I imagine we'll see that change fairly soon because, who knows? I mean, BB did some interesting things to protect, I'm trying to remember his name, Stefan in Mortal Dictata. Mm-hmm. Yeah, granted, that was he mostly did that for Naomi, and he had time to get to know her. But still, it'll be interesting to see what he does going forward.
And we've got another 3 episodes to find out too.
Yeah, in the Kilo 5 trilogy, he's the bastard with a heart. it's true.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree at all. I think you're spot on. Except in Mortal Dictata, there I just feel he's a bastard, but that's my own. Those are my own. That relates to a bunch of issues with that novel, which I won't get into here. Unless we want to sit down for 6 hours.
No.
I still haven't read Mortal Dictata now that I think about it.
I'll say this, and this will be the last thing I say on Mortal Dictata this episode. It's worth reading once, just because it's a Halo novel, and there are a couple things that are nice about it. Overall, I hated it, but I would still recommend anybody to read it and form their own opinion on it.
Gotcha. I have a few other books to finish anyway, so that'll be another one for another day. But going back to Mashaak, he finally gets his comm pad back. Of course, he's like a little kid. First thing he notices is he has a bunch of unread messages, and then he has a grave revelation.
He lost his spot on the leaderboards in Ungoy Farmer. The greatest tragedy to hit us in 2558.
Farmville just doesn't go away, does it?
No, it doesn't.
And there is there was so much hype.
Twisted enough to come up with something like Ungoy Farmer?
hey, they did try to wipe out our species.
Yeah, it was the Ungoy that did that, not the Covenant, yeah. The Ungoy. the little fart breathers.
So it's crazy that line, it's this little throwaway line, and then it's exploded all over social media.
Uh-huh.
343, you got to do this. You got to go to Zanga or go to some other social or mobile game developer. Get this made, or go with Vanguard since you already have a relationship with them. And
go, there you go.
Get Ungoy Farmer made.
Ungoy Farmer.
Yeah, I did find it interesting. It was called Ungoy rather than Grunt Farmer, but still.
I wonder what Ungoy Farmer is like. Are you like growing? Is it like a Sim City kind of or a Sims type of thing?
You have to encourage them to multiply, and then you send them into battle. And then you have the multiply again. I don't know.
I can see this game going into all kinds of bad places.
Yeah.
So Pins had an interesting idea in the chat. Do a game within a game. So do you guys know, you may not, but Black Ops had the Zorg game in Black Ops.
Yeah.
They could do something like that within Halo. Maybe Halo 6, there's a little extra little thing you can go and play Ungoy Farmer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Get on the Halo, get on the Waypoint leaderboard.
If they make it, there have to be leaderboards.
That's oh, definitely. Much,
of course. Of course there would have to be. Anyways, that's the most tragic thing that Mashok could have found, that he lost his leaderboard spot on Ungoy Farmer. I mean, that's just devastating. I mean, I know people probably put hours into stuff like Farmville and stuff like that, so I'm sure they can relate so well to this.
Well, I've got hours into Halo Wars.
Yeah, but Halo Wars is a real game.
But
ouch.
Well, I've got hours into Solitaire too, but hey.
Solitaire takes skill. Especially Vegas style.
Yeah, I don't do Vegas. I love the way the childish excitement that he has, that he's got the compad again.
It's spreading like, give me. No, wait.
I got to set up your toy first and then you can use it.
Yeah, so I have to put the batteries in first.
But yeah, it's really nice to have Mashok back.
Mm-hmm.
This was a really nice episode to have.
Yeah. After the, like, all that heavy emotion from the last few episodes, it was like mm-hmm. nice little way to break the tension for a bit.
A little bit of lightheartedness, which is something that for Halo 4, you didn't really have every once in a while joke or just sight of laughter or humor. And I feel that Hunt the Truth has done a really good job of kind of recapturing that. And it sounds like from what we've seen from Halo 5 so far, that it's going to capture that pretty well as well.
I regret everything.
Yeah, if Bio was here, he'd do that perfectly.
Yeah, I can't.
Which he is making a return to the show at some point because he does have internet back. So we will be Bio-less for not much longer. Well, he has internet. It's just slow. He went from hamster net to something slower. Carrier pigeon.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, when it's as bad as our internet in Austin for RTX, it's pretty bad.
The way he was describing it, it was worse.
It sounds like dial-up.
I think dial-up would be faster.
I'm
pretty sure that at 56K, it would only take about 2 minutes to load a homepage. Oh, well, Google's homepage. Bing, it'd probably take about 20, but Google's homepage, it'd probably only take about 2 or 3.
Shouldn't really take that long. Anyways, going back to Ungoy Farmer. Maya leaves Mashok off to do his thing to let him focus on figuring out what's going on in the slush. So she walks through the rest of the house just to see what's going on. There's clothes draped everywhere, ration wrappers all over the floor. But she noticed that amongst all the mess, there was something that wasn't touched. And she had a shelf of memorabilia that Mashok didn't even touch. So she walked over there. She actually saw a picture on the stand, and it was of her holding a trophy, and she recalls it as possibly some kind of like spelling trophy, but She remembers where it was, and it was in her old dad's cabin, or her dad's old cabin. I got those words backwards. And it was something that really stuck with her, because whenever she was trying to establish her safe house, it was something that she constantly remembered, and it was real to her. That was one of those things that she just kept on and latched onto when she was making her safe house. And as she was kind of remembering through stuff, she, out of the corner of her eye, she saw Boswick was awake, and she just had this like hatred in her eyes and just sense in her face that Boswick was ready to just kill her. She was just totally betrayed by the fact that Pharaoh was not who she said she was. Maya says that by the time she was starting to try to say something, Boswick attacked her with a scalpel, which, to Maya's credit, Boswick was still kind of out from the sedative, so it wasn't very hard to subdue her, and before she decided to back down and stop trying to resist. Maya goes on to kind of do the whole motherly figure thing, since she brought Boswick up and kind of raised her. She said that she understands why she's angry and why she would want to kill, like try to kill Maya at the time. But as they're struggling, Boswick says, just kill me and torture me. And Maya's like, well, why would I do that? Boswick's like, I'd rather be killed and tortured than in the hands of a traitor. So they kind of go back and forth. Maya's saying that she was trying to protect her. She's her only friend. Boswick says Pharaoh and her were friends, not her and Maya. She doesn't even know Maya. She was lied to. And Pharaoh finally breaks down to it. It's like, I know you don't know me. I've lied, but it's time I've told you the truth. And it's the least I can do. So she offers up for Boswick to ask her questions about who she is when she started out with Oni. And there's another series of questions that go on, and Maya kind of interludes here in the podcast, saying that one of the things that she felt justified by telling Boswick the truth was that for somehow it would protect her in the end whenever they would meet up with Oni again or whatever. But as she answered more and more questions, as she continued to open up to Boswick, she knew that deep down that it was just finally time to stop lying to people and tell the truth. Stop being the Oni spook and actually care about these people. Because as she goes on to say, when Boswick was asking about Pharaoh saying that we needed to build each other up and be this economic power, that she started to believe in what she was actually preaching as Pharaoh to these people, of actually rebuilding their economy and being something of like a worthy power that the UNSC should actually deal with. And I mean, that's something that we've seen for the past few episodes, but it's just kind of finally at that precipice. And this is, I think, the defining moment for Maya, for herself, that, okay, what I've been doing for Oni, it's done. It's over. Does that kind of sound like, for you guys, is this kind of a defining moment?
Mm-hmm. It definitely seems like it, but I could still see her deciding to, it doesn't seem like she's gone 100% over that line just yet. Like, she's heading towards, I'm no longer with Oni, but she's keeping that one foot just over the line, just because, maybe out of habit. Even by the end of this, it almost feels like she might at one point be willing to go back if she resolved everything. But I might be misreading that.
Yeah, the way I saw it, she's pretty much, in her own mind, she's burned the bridges. She can't go to Oni. She can't go to the rebels, because Yeah,
As we get to later, or they're shooting the bridges. But anyway,
yeah, pretty much. Or well, she kind of set the charges, and they kind of blew it up, in a sense. But yeah, if it's not now, it's definitely cemented, and a little bit later on. So as she was going through talking about how she definitely felt more in line of what Pharaoh was talking about, Mashak yells from the other room, Maya! So she runs into the other room, and Mashak was like, you could have told me when you handed me the data pad that Chief was dead.
I could have, but that wouldn't have been as comical.
It's true.
The whole time that he's saying this line, I'm imagining him standing there in front of the tablet, pointing at it.
Yes.
You're pointing at it with one finger and his hand on his hip with the other. Like, really? This toothpick guy standing here pointing at the compad with his hand on his hip, looking at Maya. It's just, that's the image that popped in my head.
Yeah, definitely one of those, like, you couldn't have told me this? And, like, hello, this is news breaking here. I guess that's one way to look at it. Yeah, sure.
It's like, look, I just respect spoilers, okay? I understand how that works. Didn't want to spoil the experience.
I want you to find out for yourself. Have a little revelation. You know, get a little treat for getting back into the slush. It was a test.
It's like watching. Yeah, it's like watching Seven. You never want to know the end before going in. Ruins the whole thing.
Yeah. So he finds out that Chief is dead, but turns out he's not so dead. The official news is the whole loop that we saw, the same video that we saw a couple weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. Oh yeah, almost. Well, 2.5 weeks ago. Yeah, it's actually been that long.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy, right?
Yeah. Halo 5 is almost here, gosh. Of Oni's press release of Chief dying and the whole announcement of the mess up of the year, the 2560 instead of 2558.
Do you ever think they, once they caught that, they went in and maybe corrected it?
So I'm assuming they did after that, but it was one of those things that, well, I guess if they edited the footage after, like, Mashaq had a chance to get on the slush, like, if he was there, if he had access when they first aired it, then they would have, he would have caught it. But the fact that it's probably been edited so many times after the fact that he's now getting access to it, he probably hasn't known. Because I was waiting for him to say something about, well, this is happening. They said this is in the future, but now thinking about it, if they've gone and cleaned up as many copies as they can, then he's probably not going to find it very easily.
Yeah. Though someone did have an interesting idea about why, if you look around, it almost seems like the mess up with the year might have been intentional. And somebody had the idea that maybe that was done intentionally by, like, in universe by Michael Sullivan. For, like, their idea was essentially that to show that maybe he's not quite as on Oni's side as we might otherwise believe. I don't know. It was just like one of those ideas that I saw going around. And there are some implications that mess up with the year was done on purpose. Like, in the real world, it was done on purpose, not necessarily in universe. But anyway.
All right. So moving on.
Sorry.
No. That's fine. That's totally fine. So going back to what Mashaq was saying about how Chief wasn't really dead. And Oni was telling this big cover-up. It's the loop over and over again. But the actual story that he's been able to find is that there's a lot of speculation that Chief isn't actually dead. A bunch of theories out there in the slush. Lots of counter-theories to those theories. And BB obviously inserts his little witty remark, reliable, I'm sure.
Sorry, just one other interjection there. I know that, like, we know this was written well before, and, like, written and recorded well before we actually got to hear it, but I feel like that was meant to be sort of a slight nod to the controversy that would undoubtedly be stirred up by those live action commercials.
Well, and as we heard from from Noah when he was actually in our first episode that we did, he was still making episodes as they were going. A lot, granted, like you said, a lot of the script was already done, but.
Or, like, we know, like, they had already completed the script before recording, whereas, unlike with the last season, season one, where they're kind of writing and recording and had as you even said yourself, you know, had more of a chance to react. But, yeah, regardless, it's like, I would not be surprised if there was some deliberate, what I already said.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say that there's possibly some, a little bit of room to kind of customize the experience based on how fans react. So while the script is already there, there's still a possibility to react to how fans are reacting and maybe just have little segments in there that are still kind of left open-ended, where it's like, okay, based on how people are reacting, okay, come up with a couple of lines, just get them to record a couple of these lines real quick, and bam, you're done. Like, have certain key points where it's like, okay, based on how it's going so far, we know that the script is going to go like this, but you could insert a couple of these things here depending on what's going on. That kind of stuff.
I could see them recording like extra options to possibly edit in based on
that too. Yeah.
Whatever.
Yep. So going back to what Mashaq was saying about the speculations and the theories, Maya starts to ask, well, why would they cover, or what would the chief's deaths cover up, and why would they destroy his legacy by making him die? And Boswick enters the room, and she actually points out that his death cements his legacy, and goes on to say, and I don't know if this is from something, I want to say that it is, but she said, heroes are born out of suffering but are cemented in death. Something like mm-hmm. that.
I believe she said that Farrell actually said that, wasn't it? Or
well, in the storyline, yes.
Yeah.
Farrell said that, but I think Des is saying somebody not in the Halo canon, right?
Right, yeah.
Probably.
If someone wants to do a quick Google search on that, then feel free. So after that kind of extra thought put in there, which kind of strikes a chord a little bit with them, Maya goes on to say, well, what is it served by covering up the anomalies to cement Chief's legacy? And Mashaq obviously pulls out the smart answer and is like, well, nothing, unless the truth is actually scarier than what it seems. If it's worse off with Chief being off the grid, like not following orders. And he brings up the whole issue with Biko, how Biko might have been a test run to see how people would respond. And if people were really scared of Chief kind of going off the rails, then the fact that maybe he is more off, maybe he's continuing to not follow orders from Oni, that the Oni AI found it more valuable to portray him as being dead and cement the icon that has become the Master Chief to cover up the fact of what's actually going on. And Maya would know, because she was just on that end of that AI computation of being disposable when Ilsa was attacked. So it kind of makes sense if you think about it, the whole thing about how Chief is going off and not following orders. Of course, you don't want the public to really find out that one of its soldiers is now not following orders. And that was the whole thing of the last video that we got this past week.
Especially like the hero of the last big war against humanity.
Yeah.
That'd be a PR nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Dust, as far as that phrase that she said.
Yeah.
Just doing some searching. It looks pretty much... It's not concrete in any text that I can find, but it does on a web search. It brings up a lot of religious related stuff. So it could be something that, you know, a pastor or something you've heard in the past say, or something similar to it.
I haven't associated with anything religious before, but. Okay.
Well, they what basically what the search engine's doing is associating it with the sacrifice of Jesus.
Mm.
That, you know, the Lord sacrificed Jesus to pay for our sins. But that's what the bulk of the searches come up. It doesn't come up with anybody saying a direct quote.
Yeah, I'm looking more for like a quote of it.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that's necessarily a biblical thing.
No, but I mean, that's what the web searches are turning up.
Okay.
I checked Bing and I also checked Google, and they're both coming up pretty much the same thing. It's not coming up as anything that was quoted out of any text or anything like that, or speeches.
Okay. It just sounds like it's from some author wrote it like back in the 70s or something,
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. At least it kind of sounds like that.
Well, it's probably something it was probably something very similar, just not exactly word for word.
Probably. Yeah. So going on, she kind of asks Maya, after following up with the whole thing that Mashaq said about Biko being in the dry run, she asks, well, is there any kind of new info out there? And this is where we actually learn a little bit about the triad. that mystical little Twitter account that's been tweeting away for the past, what, 5 weeks? 4 weeks?
Yeah.
Here we go. The future's tweeting in the past.
They have transcendence to where time doesn't matter.
Apparently.
Praise be to Dosk. His word is true. We shall all transcend by accepting the light.
So we get this little preview into, kind of a little bit more explanation of what the Triad actually is. And from what Mashak was able to gather, it's kind of a little religious cult, has a following that these anomalies aren't random, that they're the signs of the galactic end times, and that transcendence is upon us. Because of everything that's going on, it kind of remarks the return of Dosk Gevadim. So he is our fearless leader in the light shining bright for our transcendence. And he's been preaching about the multiple lives, the three lives, if you haven't heard about all three lives, and how Maya goes on to say how there's been millions of followers across Waypoint that has been established, and one day this guy just randomly dropped off the map. Some people only think that he was just hiding away or that he died, but now he...
Clearly he transcended, and now he has come back to the physical plane to lead us in this time of finality.
Right.
And also he's played by Mark Hamill.
Yes, which you were ecstatic about today, and I'm a little...
Oh, God, giddy. Yes.
So I wonder how many people actually picked it up.
I think the Joker in him like stood out so much at points. I think it's like nearly impossible not to. Like, I was worried because he has quite a range, but it was kind of funny hearing the Joker come through, and it's like, oh, okay, that's Mark Hamill.
Yeah, that's where I got it. I started hearing that Joker come through.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
It's been so long since I've watched any of those Batman cartoons, though, so I just didn't really have the only reference point that I could really remember was Star Wars, and it just wasn't... picking it out.
To get it out of Star Wars.
Yeah. For me, yeah. it was like, it sounded like the Joker, but a lot of it actually went back to the Trickster from The Flash, because he was on last season, and it was he was basically playing the Joker, just without, being the Joker. And oh, God, he was just having so much. But anyway, I'm getting off topic.
No, it's on topic. It's relevant. I mean, Mark Hamill
is...
You don't
want me to go in. I mean, yeah, but I shouldn't rant about Mark Hamill and The Flash as much as I want to.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah, it's like, I don't want to.
I'm thinking he's saying this is the rabbit hole.
Yeah, exactly. I'm trying to avoid it.
Okay. I appreciate that. I did write down the quote, and I do want to read it because it is...
Please.
Kind of enlightening in a way. So this is something that Oni was blocking for a while, but there have been plenty of copies and the word has been spreading. So this is straight from the mouth of Dosk Gevadim. And he says, "For our struggles, I have willed myself back into this plane of causation and particle so that I may illuminate the meaning of these events. Exquisite transcendence is yours for the taking. O children, we are now upon the rebirth. These so-called disasters herald a new age of unification through disentanglement, a glorious unbecoming, freedom from the quivering vessels of self we've clung to for so long. Do not fear these events. Do not fear their power. For as the worlds shake, we are inevitably arriving at the precipice of existence, the edge of a metaverse that is awakening for us, as we, who have only known the night, are about to bear witness to the first dawn. That is the advent of the third life, and I find myself humbly bestowed with a genetic imperative to release your fear to help you step lively from the edge into ascendance. The spiritual genocide that awaits those who do not open their eyes, the abyss beneath them, I cannot bear. This is only the beginning."
Praise be to Dosk.
Pretty interesting stuff in here.
And there's a few interesting things with Dosk. Like, for one, I remember Noah was saying that Mark originally wanted to do like an Eastern European accent. And I kind of wish, like, it maybe after this is all done, I would love to hear what Mark Hamill's original idea for that would have sounded like.
Like, here's some of the audition tapes.
Yeah, cause since we got like, I wouldn't say like I don't like dislike it at all, but I was all. There was a little something almost too stereotypical about the Southern preacher accent. Not that I dislike it. But the other interesting thing, and this was just brought up in the chat, like, how did he get off Beta Gabriel? Since here's the interesting thing. We do know we go to Beta Gabriel in Halo 5 because we have that map Fathom, which is both a multiplayer location and a location in the campaign.
Okay.
Just food for thought. Like, I doubt we'll run into Dosk or anything, but I have to wonder if there might be some relationship there between Dosk. Maybe he got forced off Beta Gabriel and now he has to come back into the limelight. Maybe not by choice, but he's just kind of like...
They did say that there would be a character from Hunt the Truth that would make an appearance in the game.
Yeah.
Could be Dosk.
Could be Dosk.
Could be Mashak. Could it be Mashak?
Could be Mashak.
Could be Mashak.
That's probably Dosk. He ran out of innocent people to shoot.
There's a couple of characters that have been in here that it could be. I would think it's more going to be kind of a serious character, or either a very serious character, or it's going to be one of those characters that's kind of in the background, because they said that it's going to be someone that's not really a pivotal part of the story, but it's just kind of a toss in, kind of like as a reference back to Hunt the Truth.
Yeah. Maybe Sully.
I mean, it could be Petra. Well, I guess it could technically be Petra.
Petra would be cool since she's got the relationship with Thomas Lasky. So it's that extra another point of connection there. But yeah.
Well, we don't know what exactly happened to her after Maya found her.
That's true, though. Yeah, we don't know where she is. Maybe we'll find out.
I don't know. So the whole point of this speech that Dosk has is basically saying that everything that is going on, and Mashak pretty much summed it up, that this is pretty much the end of time. Like, the transcendence is upon us. It's time to ascend. That all these events that are happening, there's no reason to fear them. Like, this is the next step. This is that third life that everyone has been, like, that's been preached about. And one of the things that is kind of near the end, where he's talking about the abyss beneath them. I think that was kind of the key thing that really stuck out to Maya, or at least in my opinion, that seems to be the thing where they're starting to wonder, well, could this guy actually have intel on what these things are? And it's just kind of made a religion based around it, because there's a lot of desperation out there. And for people that are desperate, it's pretty easy to pick up some really strange beliefs. And from her opinion, the Triad is definitely one of those. Of course, there's a little bit of speculation on, like, if there is intel that he could possibly have. And Mashak kind of makes a interesting point. Well, anything could really happen. I mean, the human race almost got wiped out by fart eaters, which, I mean, again, that's one of those really witty lines that was just perfect.
When I heard that line, it kind of made me wonder if that was something that was actually scripted or not, because it sounds like something the actor came up with.
Yeah. Honestly, a lot of Mashak's lines sound like they could have been ad-libbed, or at least partially. They're so spontaneous, so full of life and energy, it almost seems impossible that they were 100% scripted. No offense to the scripts, of course.
Yeah. I wish Noah or Ian were in here to tell us if there was some ad-libbing in here.
I mean,
no.
Sorry, Crash.
Next time we're here, we'll have to ask.
I'll specify Crash.
I know.
But... So after that witty remark, BB chimes in. Well, first of all, it's methane, and I don't think the human race was about ready to fall to grunts alone.
Have you seen the rates they multiply at? They're galactic bunnies.
That is true. That is very true. So BB's like, well, this is all fine and dandy, but we should really get off of this detour and get back to actually getting to Oni with this data. And Maya's like, there's no way I can go back with this kind of data. There's no way that Oni would not mistreat this.
Definitely. I agree.
Yeah. And obviously BB is like, well, this really isn't the best idea. It's really the best option you have right now is to take me back with the data. And that's your best ticket out of this. And she's like, well, what's the real threat here? Is that a recommendation or is that a threat? And then her phone rings, which shouldn't happen because she set up a blackout zone where, like, no tech should be going, like, having any communication whatsoever. But apparently a call got in. So apparently she didn't lock it down as well as she thought that she did. And she picks up, she answers, and it's Noah. of all people. And then she starts to like completely let loose on him about why she wasn't informed about the bombing, like what the heck's going on. And Noah basically tells her, well, you didn't check in. They think you're on the run. There's an extraction team to get you, and they just want to bring you in. That's not happening. She's not all for that, because the whole bring her in my mind is basically what happened to Ben. Midnight facility and going away for good.
The only place they could, the only place they could bring her is Midnight facility, given her cover. And at this point, probably not going to return.
Yeah. So she says her goodbyes, and Noah's is like, no, this is a bad idea. And she hangs up and she's like, okay, we don't have much time. Help me flip the bed.
And they're like, why?
And they flip the bed and
why does,
and there's grenades.
Why does my bed have grenades in under it?
Yes. The best quote of this entire episode.
Uh-huh.
And he basically says it three times. And the third time.
Guys, I know there's other pressing issues, but why are there grenades under my bed?
I love it. Oh man. I love that line. There's no way that some of these aren't ad-libbed. There's no way. There's just no way.
Yeah.
That was an amazing line and delivered perfectly.
Oh yeah. It's like, I know we're in the middle of a crisis here, but why are there grenades under my bed?
Well, the guy who plays Mashaq is a stand-up comedian, so I would not be surprised.
Fair enough, but I mean, come on. Like, he's rolling with this. Yeah, he's loving this.
That's what I'm saying. Like, he's got that experience. He's the kind of person that could very well ad lib. So
I wonder if these were recorded with, you know, all the actors in one studio, or if they were recorded separately.
That's a good question. I like to imagine that they were all in the studio together, because it just makes it, the interactions that much more real.
The chemistry, yeah.
It's like when you get cut off, the chemistry. It's like when you, because like, especially like if you're getting cut off by a character, it's going to sound that much more natural if you actually get cut off by the actor sitting 2 feet away from you, rather than if they cut that in, you know, post or something.
Well, I mean, I'm sure like when Maya does her voiceover.
Yeah, that's obviously recorded
separately. That's recorded separately, but.
I
would love to be a fly on the wall while they're doing the recording, like with the group. Like, you have the actor for BB, Mashaq, and Maya all in the room, just feeding off of each other, watching that. That would be intense.
Yeah.
I would love it if they released a blooper reel.
I hope so. That would be awesome. I'll ask Noah. Hey, can we get some retakes?
Bloopers?
Yeah, bloopers. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
They have not done any of that since, you know, Bungie did it with Halo 2. I never found any outtakes for like Halo 3 or Breach or Halo 4 or ODST. The last time I was able to find any outtakes was for Halo 2. I would love to hear some outtakes.
I could swear there were outtakes for Halo 3 on one of the bonus DVDs.
I thought there was for Halo 3 and ODST.
Yeah. ODST, I don't know if they had outtakes. They definitely had video of the recording sessions. Like, you're talking about people together, like Nathan Fillion and Trisha Helfer recorded side by side.
So I wouldn't be surprised for season 2 if they were recorded together. I think for season 1, because it was something that was developed as they were going along, that was probably recorded separately.
Well, very few times did you have interactions that would require that type of, you know, face-to-face conversation, you know, where in this one, they're throwing a lot of things into the episodes all at once. So, because, you know, they have such a compressed timeline that they're trying to do in these, you know, few weeks before the game launches. So,
yeah,
it's making for a great show.
Oh, I love it.
Whatever they're doing.
I love it. I love it so much. So they flip the bed. She sets the charge for 10 seconds and she's about ready to make it go. And she's checking with both Bostwick and Mashaq to make sure that they're ready. And Bostwick says, I'm good. And I love Mashaq. He says, I should have paid more attention in PE.
That line was definitely, that line was definitely ad-libbed.
That was ad-libbed, for sure. That had to be.
And it's like stuff like that that makes me think they probably did record some of this, at least some of this together, if not all of it.
I think they had to.
Minus the voiceover.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So 10 seconds, which actually counted, it was 13 seconds. So someone needs to work on their audio editing skills, Noah. Wink, wink. And it wasn't something where it's like it got to zero and then the audio just cut out. There was still audio going on in the background. But once everything exploded, we had the classic Wilhelm scream.
God, that another thing that exploded all over Twitter, and Noah was very surprised to see that.
I mean, it's pretty obvious what the Wilhelm scream is. It's pretty much an internet phenomenon.
Like, the internet's made it very well known.
Oh yeah, like if there's a Wilhelm scream, people are going to pick it out.
Especially now, yeah. Thank you, Nostalgia Critic. Thank you, Team Four Star. Thank you, Spoony. I'm sure there are others.
Yeah, it's pretty much everywhere.
Yeah.
That happened. They have they got to the dropship just fine. Everyone got out unscathed. Left all the...
Oh, hey! Crash just came in.
Hey, Crash. There we go. We have a question for you.
Crash.
Totally late. Actually, we have a lot of questions for you.
Yes.
We'll save those towards
what
the end.
What is your favorite color?
Wait, this isn't Monty Python. This is Halo.
Oh.
What is the airspeed velocity of an unladen jackal?
What do you mean? Some jackal colony.
Rutin or Tavalin?
I don't know that. Oh, goodness. But yeah, so they made it to the dropship, making their way off the planet. And of course, Maya's kind of reflecting on the lives that she had. So basically, her cover as Pharaoh is completely gone. If Bosswick were to ever get out, she would tell everyone that Pharaoh was not real. Maya Sankar, the colonel who worked for Oni, well, now she's pretty much gone because she's on the run from Oni. And the person that she was before she even joined Oni, all of her memories are now burning up in the safe house that is just going away. So basically, everything that she's worked up towards this point is gone.
She is, well, blown up all her bridges.
Pretty much. And at this point, she has no idea what to do next. But as she said, someone helped make that decision for her. So they're going along. There's a little alarm that goes off of a ship that's coming. And Mishak's like, well, BB's obviously selling us out. And he's like, I haven't done anything. There's a ship approaching on our starboard. So Maya goes to put the cargo ship in full thrust. And she says she's going to start doing evasive maneuvers. And BB's like, I'd advise if you all buckle in. So she just tells everyone to do the same. And before you know it,
forced deceleration.
Yeah. They get pulled in by what she believes is an Oni ship. Like the whole like tractor beam type of stuff, like grinding to a halt. So they got pulled in, and she was going on how if they weren't buckled in, they would definitely be a pile of just mush.
Mm-hmm.
She was struggling to get up as she got out of her restraints. She says she could hear the boarding tube attached to the doors. To the holes of the ship. Heard the mag boots of them walking on the gangway. Heard even the tack system hacking the door to open it. And she was going on how she's been on the other side of that, and she knows what's next. She knows what happens when she gets taken away. And she was scared because she didn't want to go out like Ben did. And when the door opens, it's not Oni. It's not Sully. It's not anyone that she knows, but it's jackals. Yeah. Worse than Oni.
Yep. Because Oni doesn't eat people as far as we know. As far as we know.
As far as we know. A lot of faith in that one.
I'm pretty sure even Oni wouldn't go to that point.
We don't know. We've never seen it, man.
I'm pretty sure. I could be wrong.
Man. You don't know, man.
But it's... Oh, man. I'm like, jackals? Where the heck are they going next?
I was totally not expecting jackals.
And me neither.
There's so many. I really hope they bring back, at the very least...
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, like, these ones...
Sorry,
the ones
I have to interrupt
describe,
you for a second. Crash just said Sully is a hungry boy. That is horrible.
Oh my
gosh. I'm sure Sully does a plenty of ass chewing, but I really don't think it's that.
That is dark.
Oh my god.
Now Perengoski, on the other hand, not so sure.
Well, how do you think she lived so long?
Oh man.
She read the stories of Elizabeth Bathory. I'm sure I mispronounced that, and you know, was inspired.
She's like a vampire.
Halo's a dark place.
Oh.
Can anybody say off the deep end?
Wow. That was okay. Sorry. Go finish what you were going to say. No. I just had to interject with that one because that was. Yeah.
Right, Pets Halo. She doesn't. I was going to. Yeah, she doesn't eat people. She drinks their blood. She absorbs. Yeah,
no. Vampire.
Okay. But. So back onto a. Okay. So I was going to say, now that the jackals are, even though what we hear, it sounds very much like the Ibiashin variant. I'm hoping that perhaps we'll see either Sav Fel from Mortal Dictata. It's always possible to have different types of jackal, different types of Khegyar working together, or even Chol Vaughn, since Hunt the Truth's got a great habit of taking underutilized characters and bringing them back and just make, you know.
Chol Vaughn was.
She was the female skirmisher from Mortal Dictata, who basically wanted to get her hands on Pious Inquisitor to start a Khegyar navy, so they would never be mistreated like by the Covenant or anything else ever again.
I didn't think she survived.
Pretty sure she survived.
Because I was thinking she was still on the ship when it went boom.
I'll have to double check. I thought she did.
More books to reread or Halopedia to look up.
Well, if I remember in the book, they follow her moving through the hallways. Yeah, here, but
she made,
after that,
got the shuttle bay in order to escape. So most she is alive.
If she got away far enough away from the ship.
Yeah. So it's possible she's alive. I kind of hope she is because I felt she was very underutilized and more.
Definitely.
The whole thing just turned. That was one of the things I didn't really like.
So one of the things I thought of whenever they mentioned the jackals was. Maya mentioned that there were alien traders around the area where her safe house was, but there was really no traffic by her place. But remember, was it Cold Protocol, where they had all the Khegyar traders and whatnot? I'm wondering if there's any kind of reference back to maybe some of those sects of Khegyar.
True, but in the Cold Protocol, that was a setup.
Yeah, I know, but it just kind of goes back to show
the Jackal race. Or Khegyar race. We got to be nice to them now because they're our friends. But anyway, they are a pirate/trade-based society.
Right. And it kind of goes, and this was kind of talking to you a little bit.
Sorry to, I think Crash just confirmed that Chol Vaughn is not going to appear, whether he meant to or not. Just based on, yeah. I don't think he meant, yeah. We'll see. Maybe that's just what I'm interpreting from our little conversation in the comments.
Yeah.
But we'll see. Yeah. I still have hope for Sawfell, but I doubt it at this point. It's probably going to be a bunch of Ibiashin.
Yeah. So that pretty much wraps it up at the Khegyar.
Yep.
For this episode.
They cut it off right there.
Yeah. It was a pretty abrupt ending with the whole Jackal thing. So it was one of those things where it's like, wait, what just happened?
Say what?
It kind of left you like, okay, what? That's going to make it for an interesting beginning episode for the next one.
Uh-huh, definitely.
I've just kind of, whenever I was thinking of Cold Protocol, I was thinking of the whole pirate mentality. And when I was talking to you earlier, Ian, it was more along the lines of, I wouldn't necessarily think that Jackals were necessarily a worse situation than Oni because they could just be trying to pirate and pillage and not necessarily there to like capture and torture like Oni might.
Oh, yeah. I think, like, at the worst they would probably expect is you know, slavers, which it still sucks. Nobody wants to be a slave.
But you're not a slave to Oni.
That's what I...
You're not in the padded white cell.
Yeah, being cut off.
You know.
I don't know which is worse, being in a padded white cell or being eaten.
Are you being eaten dead or eaten alive? That's... See, you got to get that distinction.
I'm pretty sure they don't really care either way.
I don't know. They're an intelligent species. Who knows? They, I would imagine that they would cook their food and, you know, kill properly.
No, there has been no indication that they even know what a fire is.
Of course they know what a fire is. Haven't you seen Halo 2? There was a fire in Halo 2. In the original Halo 2.
You're talking about
Halo 2 Anniversary. I think it's the legendary one where the grunt is actually playing with two figures, and there's actually a fire there.
Yeah.
In front of them, so they know what a fire is.
I meant as far as when it comes to cooking.
I mean, they're a spacefaring civilization. I'm sure they know how to cook.
You sure it's just not protein? I'm just saying, goop?
Based on what we know, based on what we know of human evolution, and granted, this is human evolution, but I think it can apply.
Their evolution has taken a totally different path than ours, though.
Well, yeah, but I think
they are a humanoid form, but
yeah. I'm just saying, I think you can probably apply certain aspects of what, you know, helped our early ancestors along to their early ancestors, you know, particularly the habit of cooking food, which led to longer lifespans and allowing you to carry meat around from place to place with a, you know, so.
Anyway, beat them to death.
Yep.
Yeah.
Slavery, it still sucks.
Yeah. Either way, it's a bad thing.
Yeah. All right, well, that is going to wrap it up for us tonight for episode 3 of Hunt the Truth Season 2. We have 3 more episodes coming all the way up to launch day of, well, I guess I don't know what the exact schedule is. I wouldn't be surprised if for the last one they do it like on the night of the Halo 5 Guardians release, or I don't know if they'll just do it on the Tuesday still. But regardless, we have 3 more episodes for Hunt the Truth Season 2. And we will be doing those every Tuesday up until launch. And I guess through launch, technically, for the last one. But thank you guys for tuning in. For everyone that was tuning in on Twitch, thank you for contributing to the discussion in here. I did see a few things pop up from Eric Ibu about some of the stuff that was on the picture, but it was nothing really groundbreaking, like anything that we didn't really see before or hear before in any of the past episodes. So I don't think anything really stuck out so far other than from what we already know. I think the BXR was kind of a fun addition in there, and the whole Sully's a dick thing was pretty interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
it's basically just a wall of Easter eggs is the way I've described it.
Fair enough. So that is going to wrap it up for us tonight. Thank you again, Toa Freak, for being on. It is great to have you back. And we look forward.
It's absolutely pleasure to be here.
We look forward to having you back on the future episodes. As for the episode on this Thursday, I will actually be in New York for Comic-Con. So not sure if we're actually going to do an episode. We do have a lot of Forge stuff to talk about since we just got a huge, huge Forge dump today. If you guys have not seen the article, you need to go see it because there are some fundamental changes coming to Forge for Halo 5.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of stuff. Like I got a taste of it before the announcement from some people, but after seeing this whole blow thing, it's like, whoa, that's a lot of stuff. There is some crazy. It's
basically everything you could ask for short of a full on map creator.
Pretty much. I mean, there was some of the stuff in the video where they had the projected terrain where the terrain actually moves along with the train.
Yeah, I saw that. That was like the craziest thing. You got the group of objects and then was actually able to move that. Like it looked like you could actually group like terrain.
Uh-huh.
What would you call that? What did you call it though specifically? It
was the projected terrain is actually
projected terrain. Yeah.
Like terrains, like I think it was the actual map, but terrain pieces that you can move other objects around it, but it bends in such a way where like it still is flush up against certain pieces. So I'm guessing that's part of the magnet system that they have, but the terrain is not.
But that was pretty cool how it worked like that. Yeah.
It's so crazy.
I thought it was just wicked watching him drag that base across the field.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we're talking about.
Watch it move through the field and not, you know, like pick it up, move it over, but he was just dragging it through and you could see the ground just following it.
Yeah.
And that's what you're talking about. And that is absolutely neat. It will make from what I've read, and I do need to read it in more detail, but it'll make your buildings and stuff look more they will blend into the terrain a lot better. You know, because you know how, you know, a building, you get a building, it stands there, the dirt kind of piles up next to the building in certain spots, and it kind of becomes part of the terrain. And the way they were showing that, it looks like that's what this new system is doing, where it will help blend the pieces into the ground and you won't have just this sharp angle.
Which is amazing. Like, this forge is ridiculous. And some of the new stuff that you see in there from the lighting stuff is awesome. And the whole color things, where different objects have like primary, secondary, and tertiary colors to where you could color just about any piece.
Mm-hmm.
That is going to make Forge awesome to use again. It's not going to be the bland gray from Reach. It's going to be, you can literally create your own.
I see how it is. We can color any piece in Forge in primary, secondary, and tertiary, but we can't color our emblems. 343.
You can color your emblems, or just you just have to stick to certain themes.
No, can't. No.
I like clashing colors. Leave me alone. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
I like my red and yellow.
No, I honestly, it's really awesome what they did with Forge, the color schemes. It's.
I mean, honestly, with what they did in Reach, that blew me away with all the additions they made in Reach to the, you know, the controls and stuff like that. And then in, you know, Halo 4, in some areas we did take a little bit of a step back, but in other areas we took a pretty good leap forward. You know, that was really impressive. But with Halo 2, Halo 2 A Forge.
Yeah.
But the way they're talking about from this article, this is a total revamp of the entire Forge system.
Yeah. They're talking about how it's like treated. It's a service now that's going to be updated regularly based on community feedback, which is.
Yeah.
I just can't imagine with everything that's coming, especially now with the announcement of Forge. I can't imagine not only the budget for this game, just I can't imagine the monumental task that's going to be making that money back. Mm-hmm. And then making the profit.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure Halo 5 is going to be profitable. I just don't know how profitable. The thing that I'm concerned about is, and this does affect the profits of the game, is the launch. I've already heard some concerns about Forge not shipping with the game. But with the intense changes they are making to Forge, that they are still making to Forge 3 weeks out, I don't have a problem waiting until December.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's going to be a problem with it. I'm sorry. It will be an issue with the guys that want to get their hands on Forge. And I understand that. And I sympathize with you because I want to get in there and play with it. I am not a Forger by no means. But I still like to get in there and play with it and see how far I can throw a tank across the map. But I look at it this way. This will give you a chance to play the multiplayer as it ships and learn a little bit about the game before you go in there and start building your dream map.
Yeah.
You'll learn about the physics a little bit. You'll really get that ingrained. To make it, it'll probably make your map design a little easier. I just hope, and we haven't heard confirmation of this or not, that it ships with all its game modes. I mean, we know it's not going to ship with BTB. That's fine. But, you know, that the game at least ships with, you know, all the Slayer type game modes, you know, that are PvP, you know, King of the Hill, you know, territories, if it's going to have a territories. Of course, you'll have Capture the Flag, but you know, all those game types, race, unless they have already built some race maps for matchmaking, I can see that not shipping with the game. But I do hope that they learn their lesson and they keep race in there. And of course, Griffball. You have to have Griffball.
Yeah. Warzone is a lot of fun.
Oh, God, Warzone.
It's a lot of fun. So that's going to wrap it up for us tonight. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We will see you guys next week for another episode of Hunt the Truth. It's going to be a doozy, yay. I'm sure. And we've actually finally heard from the word of Dusk Gevadim. So praise be to him for returning to the particle and showing us the true path to transcendence. Fear not.
Praise be.
For these events happening in the other colonies, for they are indicating of the third life that we shall live to the fullest.